morning. This is Carol LaChapelle, Chief Financial Officer of Rhode Island Housing. This is the March 8th, 2023 in-person meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners Credit Committee. This meeting is also being made available via a live teleconference for public access. CJ Roteller, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this combined in-person and telephonic meeting.
Good morning, this is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for your review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for specific Rhode Island Housing staff, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask participating staffs to please mute your telephones if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Thank you, CJ. This is Kara. Corinne Myers, General Counsel for Rhode Island Housing, will provide additional information on this meeting.
Good morning. This is Corinne Myers, General Counsel speaking. Members of the public can visit the RI Housing website to view today's agenda and additional information on the actions being taken. If the teleconference is interrupted, we will stop the meeting until audio can be restored. Chairman of the Credit Committee, Kevin Orth, will preside at this morning's meeting. Commissioners and staff, please do state your name prior to speaking. And with that, I will turn it over to Committee Chairman Orth to call the meeting to order. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Corinne. This is Chairman Orth. It is now 9:32, and I'd like to call a Credit Committee meeting to order. So, Kara, would you please conduct our roll call attendance.
Sure. This is Kara. I will conduct a roll call attendance of the Credit Committee, the Board of Commissioners, and Rhode Island Housing staff. Committee Chairman Kevin Orth.
Here.
Designee Sarah Cabral.
Here.
General Counsel Corinne Myers.
Present.
Deputy Executive Director James Comer.
Present.
Director of Real Estate Development Ann Berman.
Here.
Assistant Director of Real Estate Development Dean Harrison.
Here.
Assistant Director of Real Estate Development Tony Avant.
Here.
Development Officer Seth St. Jean.
Here.
Development Officer Stephanie Booker.
Here.
And the Director of Information Technology, CJ Rotella.
Here.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, I'd like to move on to the first agenda item, which is the approval of the minutes of the Credit Committee meeting held on February 8th, 2023.
Motion.
Okay, I guess I'll second it. Any comments on minutes?
No.
Okay. I can just do a, okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Ayes have it. Motion passes. Great. move on to item number 2, which is recommendation for approval of reservation of low-income housing tax credits and firm approval of financing for parcel 9, 1, and 2 located in Providence. And Seth, you're going to present?
Yep.
Of course, thank you.
Morning, this is Seth St. Jean. Project is Parcel 9 and the developer is Penrose LLC. Deal is a hybrid 9 and 4% transaction known as Parcel 9, 1 and 2, which is how we reflected it in the resolution. The request is for a reservation on Parcel 9, 1 for $515,987 of 2022 and or 2023 low-income housing tax credits and firm approval of a home loan totaling $1,217,478 and an HTF loan of $1,230,880. For the 4% project referred to as Parcel 9-2, the request is for firm approval of a tax-exempt construction financing of up to $8.2 million and an HPF loan of $676,574. Both Parcel 9-1 and 2 is a new construction mixed-use, mixed-income development on a vacant parcel near the Fox Point neighborhood in Providence. In total, there will be 66 units built. Parcel 9-1 will include 37 units with 14 AMIs ranging from 30 to 60% AMI and 22 market rate. Parcel 9-2 will include 29 units from AMIs ranging from 30 to 60%, and this will now be fully affordable. For 1 and 2, there will be units ranging from efficiency to 2 bedrooms, and Parcel 9-1 will benefit from 8 project-based vouchers from Providence Housing Authority, and Parcel 9-2 was awarded 6 8-11 vouchers. Penrose is able to partner with Children's Friend and will feature a daycare center funded separately from the 9 and 4% projects. Parcel 9-1 will utilize solar and intends to follow the Zero Energy Home Standard and meet RNC Tier 2. Also, Energy Star 3.1, along with hardwired broadband provided to residents. Since preliminary, the developer has reallocated units between Parcel 9 1 and 2, making 2 now fully affordable to generate additional LIHTC tax credits, with additional market rate units moving to the Parcel 9 1 tranche. The unit count totals between the two remain unchanged from preliminary. Current total development cost between 1 and 2 is approximately $31 million, $31.28 million, or $458,000 per unit, less reserves, which is above our per unit cap found in our QAP. The increase can predominantly attributed to escalated construction costs that we've seen across the industry with a lot of deals coming through. The developer previously underwent extensive value engineering, resulting in roughly $1.1 million of savings. Parcel 9-2 is also carrying the cost to build the commercial space shell to include in base and generate additional tax credits. We have discussed this with NEF, who's a syndicator on the deal, and they're comfortable with this moving forward with this scenario. The commercial aspect is approximately $106,000 per unit for the 4% project. As I just said, NEF will be the syndicator on both deals, and the construction lender on both deals will be Eastern Bank. Eastern will purchase the tax and bonds issued by Rhode Island Housing in a private placement, and we'll talk about that in the next resolution that comes up. The senior lender on the deal, 9% deal, is Cedar Rapids, and the 4% deal has no senior lender. They didn't need to have permit debt there. The project conforms with underwriting Rhode Island Housing underwriting standards, with the exception of the cost above the per unit cap. Our design and construction team has evaluated the current proposed schedule values and determined that the current pricing is consistent with what we've seen on other deals currently in the pipeline. Happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Seth. I have a motion to recommend approval of reservation of housing tax credits and firm approval of financing for Parcel 9, 1, and 2.
Sarah, I'll make a motion.
Okay. Thank you, Sarah.
And sorry, I'll need you to say that.
All right. Trying to do it correctly here, and I'll second that. Okay. Do you have any questions about this one?
Can you go back, and I'm sorry, this is still kind of new to me. Can you go back and talk about the changes? It was purely the construction cost that made?
Yeah, it was probably about 80% of construction costs were the reason why that the pricing went up like it did. There's been time moving since preliminary to firm. I think we went to preliminary last year around, I think, June. So there's been a lot of changes in the industry and everything moving forward. So that's mainly what the cost increase were. Obviously, there were some financing costs with the rates the way they are and moving and everything. So that's the main, I guess, issue for the reason why cost went up.
So when this does happen, because I know it happens a lot lately, but when it does happen, does the I'm assuming they do. They provide you with a list of like a line by line of everything that goes up, and you're already reviewing. Look at that.
Yeah. So we meet on an ongoing basis with the development team. Usually the GC is a lot of times on those calls. Tony is actually a design and construction staff member on this, and we talk a lot about value engineering. We talk about the costs. You know, why is it this high? Why is it lower over here? So we have that conversation. For every deal.
I'm asking because I'm not as familiar with the process. I want to learn a little bit more about how this works. Okay.
Tony, do you want to add anything on the design and construction side?
Just a few things that I think Tony Bias isn't directly design and construction, but like Seth said, we went through an extensive value engineering process, now shaved about $1.1 million off of this deal. And one big item I do want to point out to the board and to folks at the table, this is something I sort of discovered a few days ago when I was looking at the BIOS projects and bumping up the cost based on the analytical indexes that are nationwide. Last year when we did our TDCs, they were at 12.1%, which is a pretty hard swallow. Construction costs went up 12.1%. This year it went up 16.5%. So in the last 2 years, we're looking at a 28.6% increase in construction. And that's what I think we're seeing, but this project also has lots of layers of cost involved. Because they're in the 195 district, there's lots of extra requirements that they have to adhere to, the street lighting, sidewalks, significant ground floor glazing, facade treatments. We had to put a the root garden on the roof for low impact development. The courtyard is designed for like more like a community access courtyard. Huge factors, you're going to see this in anything on 195. Unsuitable soils are really bad there. With the geopiers and the ground improvements, all the sites have a blanket wrap, which is an environmental remediation plan, basically. And in this case, this project, because they had cut and filled in that up, they have to take environmental waste off the site and force quite a bit to get rid of it. It's high performance building, you know, where RNC tier 2 is a pretty expensive energy climate here, and then net zero ready as well. Plus they got solar on the rooftop. And then we're absorbing the cost of, you know, daycare. That's what, if you look at the 4%, it just shoots right off. That's why it's not skew. If you take that out of the picture, and when I did my evaluation here, I said, okay, a TPC less reserves, less the commercial, we're at 413,944, which is telling me they probably did a pretty good job going through this and trying to get it shaved down, but the costs are high. That's kind of it in a nutshell.
Okay. And this is James Comer. I think it's important to highlight the collaborative nature of this. You know, it's not as if the developer, or really any of our developers, come back and say, well, we have a cost increase, so give us more money. Right, it's how can we all kind of participate in the process? And to Tony's point, are there design elements we can trim down? Are there maybe parts of the program that may not be the most cost effective that we can scale back or put in as an alternate if we have extra money left over in construction? And it's been throughout this process very collaborative with Penrose, as it is with the rest of our development community as well. So you say, everybody's got to take a little bit of responsibility here. Everybody has to take a little bite of this rotten apple and figure out how to get the deal done. And you know, to their credit, they've deferred some fee. They've really, you know, the contractor as well comes to the table and says, well, here's what we can do, you know. And that's a process we unfortunately go through on pretty much all of our deals, because as Tony said, when you're looking at over a 25% increase in construction costs in a two-year period, it's, you know, it's tough to manage that with the resources we have available. So credit to everybody involved in the development team to getting us where we are now, to putting this forward.
Tony, about again, I just want to add to what James said. We do extensively sit down with these developers and go through the easy process. And we're at the point where we have lots of our own standard requirements are now alternates in the project. And that's, you know, so we don't stop when we close these deals. We try to get some of our basic stuff even back. So that's where we're at.
This is Sarah again, and you would say that anything in that I-95 corridor is probably even more.
Yes.
Because of the standards that they have to have.
Exactly. I mean, they all have to have commercial on the first floor. Like, this building's designed with heavy construction, the first floor, steel construction. It's got a garage underneath it, right? And it's the ceilings are like 16, 17 feet high. These things add cost, you know, but it's part of the I-95 principles. And then they're very picky about types of lighting and types of landscaping and types of improvements.
And the garage is for the tenant, it's for the people who live there, not so much commercial.
No, it's fine.
Okay,
great. Well, thank you very much for all that feedback. It's really good to hear, particularly about this collaborative process between so many of you all and the developer to get this moving forward. So they've rearranged the financing stack on this a lot. So before, I believe we were looking at a project that wasn't going to meet debt cover, and so I had to put up a reserve. And now it looks like there's no debt on the 4% side, and the 9% side has pretty good debt cover, which is good for the long-term feasibility of the project. I'm curious about what the cash flow sharing split is on this. How much? I didn't see any repayment terms, for instance, on the home funds or the the other funds that are soft funds that are going into this deal?
Yeah, usually what happens, you know, when we get to closing, obviously, and we're getting all the closing documents squared away, it's usually 50% of cash flow for the ancillary debt. So to your point, I think, you know, there is a chance that, you know, some of these, there is some repayment there, so.
Okay, so this will be a 50?
That's standard, is 50% of cash flow. So on the 9%, it would either be the home or the HTF, and on the 9%, it's likely to be the housing production fund.
Okay. And the, I know there's, it doesn't look like there's a lot of NOI on the 4% deal, and a lot of that is made up by Head Start, which is not, you know, the most secure, I guess, tenant sometimes. But is there, can it support no debt?
Say that again.
Can the 4% side support any debt?
Yeah.
Zero right now, made up by soft dollars. I'm just wondering if we've perhaps over-subsidized, and can it support some debt?
I mean, I think in the grand scheme of things, it probably could. They'll still need to use the lease up reserve to, you know, for any shortfalls on debt coverage. And I believe NEF and the first mortgage lender are still going to have that in the deal, so the lease up reserves aren't going to go away. You know, for this deal moving forward with the 4%, I think that was kind of the best route to go, that Penrose felt that it kind of gave it the most flexibility, because the 4% is, you know, needs a little propping up. So that's basically how that, you know, conversation went.
I will add that absent the cash flow from the child care, if you pulled that out and looked at just the residential, this does not meet debt service coverage for 15 years. It goes negative. So I think to answer your question, it really can't support any debt. It might in the early years, but because it's all affordable and we negative trend, it would go south fairly early in the 15 years, but for the child care.
Okay. And it looks like that's the City of Providence is putting in over $3 million into this deal. So they are really stepping up and want to see this happen. And I'm assuming, I mean, everything's going into a big bucket, but it looks like maybe City of Providence is kind of paying for that head start.
The city has been terrific. They've been a great partner. They came in with this 2.9 after our preliminary in order to get the deal completed,
mm-hmm.
and we've had some conversations about how to divvy up so that each deal is able to stand on its own.
Okay. It looks like an absolutely phenomenal project. I mean, there's so many benefits to it. It's really pricey, but it looks like it's going to be a great project. I don't have any other questions myself. All right, let's take a vote on it. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Ayes have it. Great, and the motion passes. Thank you very much. Let's move on to item number 3, which is recommendation for authorization to issue tax-exempt bonds to support the development of Parcel 9, Phase 2, which is the tax-exempt bond side, of $8,200,000. And I guess, Seth, you'll...
Yeah, and I'll go into it again. I'll just be brief, because obviously we just talked about it, but, you know, $8.2 million for a tax-exempt private placement transaction with Millennium Corporation, a subsidiary of Eastern Bank. Brown Housing will issue the tax-exempt note to Eastern, and we'll advance the loan proceeds to the borrower with our standard obligations applying. The borrower loan and note will be assigned to Eastern and Brown Housing, and will receive a one-time origination fee of 1% of the principal amount plus an annual servicing fee. And I will say we've been meeting with the larger group of, you know, who's been going towards closing with Eastern Bank and our bond counsel and all the other parties, and, you know, I think the conversation has been going well, and the structuring, I think we're all on the same page there. So we're moving ahead, you know, pretty quickly with hopefully closing shortly.
Great. Thank you. Have a motion?
I make a motion.
Okay. And I second it. Any comments about this? I think we've talked about it.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Let's take a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Great. Motion passes. Okay. We'll move on to, let's see, number 4, recommendation for firm financing for Phase 4 located in Newport. Seth, are you doing that one again?
Putting me to work today.
Good.
So this is Seth St. Jean. Park Home 4 is the project and the developer is the Housing Authority of the City of Newport. The request is for firm commitment of a tax-exempt construction loan totaling $11.4 million, of which $4.2 million will remain as a permanent first mortgage. $926,900 of a capital magnet fund loan is being requested, and a $1,576,250 housing production fund loan as well. The project is the fourth phase of a planned five-phase redevelopment of the existing 262 public housing development in Newport. Phase four involves the demolition of 74 units contained in 21 buildings and the new construction of 51 units in six buildings. AMIs range from 30 to 60% with a mix of 1 to 4 bedroom units. Of the 51 units, 40 will have Section 8 project-based vouchers and 11 will have annual contribution contract subsidies. Current total development cost is approximately $23,451,000 per unit. And Davis-Bacon wage rates will be required. Costs between preliminary and firm have risen approximately $3.2 million, with $2 million primarily due to the industry-wide construction cost escalations. Along with the demolition and new construction, residents will enjoy new landscaping, parking areas, walking paths, and recreation areas. At closing, the investor citizens will provide an initial construction loan. It will be taken out at approximately 50% by Rhode Island Housing's construction loan. The project conforms to Rhode Island Housing standard underwriting with the exception of exceeding the QAP cost per unit. Net of reserves costs only slightly exceed the per unit at $431 per unit. The developer put the job out to bid on numerous occasions and extended deadlines as well, but only received one bid each time. So they didn't get as much feedback from GCs as they previously had wanted to. HUD had approved the use of the one bid for the GC, which is good. The inclusion of Davis-Bacon wage rates, what we've seen is it adds about 10 to 15% to the cost for the transaction. And there was also some extraordinary costs on the site related to arsenic levels in the soil. And obviously, you know, the demolition costs and everything, there's some added things there. We work closely with the design and construction staff, as we always do, and are comfortable with the numbers as it relates to the construction contract. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, sir. I have a motion to approve.
Mrs. Sauer.
Great, thanks, sir. I'll second it.
Sorry.
And do you want to start off with any questions or comments on this one?
So this is going from somebody, it's a decrease in units. And these are all, this is all units where people already live in. And
correct.
They're going to move out,
mm-hmm.
but some are not going to come back, correct?
So in total, with all five phases, and I think I touched on this on the resolution, and if we weren't super clear, apologies. But so in the total, there's going to be 262 that are being redeveloped. So out of all the phases, there's going to be a one-for-one replacement as per our requirements in the QAP. But in theory, technically, this phase is going to have a net reduction, but then there will be a positive number of units going into the next phase, phase five.
There'll be more. Okay.
Yep.
This is Matt. I just want to add, this has been an issue since the Housing Authority started their redevelopment 20-plus years ago.
Right.
Of their Newport Heights and then this one. We have reviewed their plan for phase five, and we've been pretty consistent about sort of evaluating that. So we have seen a credible plan for them to get to phase five. So it's, we should get there.
And just to be clear too, it's not as if folks are being displaced. The Housing Authority's held vacancies as they came about in preparation for this.
In the same area.
Right. So when somebody moved out, they knew they were going to be doing this construction. They said, we're not going to reoccupy that unit so that we then don't have to displace somebody in the reduction from 74 to 51. Yeah. But as Seth said, overall, the proposed five phases of the project, they will be a one-for-one replacement, so there will be no loss of units.
And I believe the relocation is well underway. I think they've relocated most. I think there's maybe a handful that they haven't that they're working on getting. So they're doing really good progress there.
So then the plan is for when the entire project, all phases are done, it's the same amount of units.
Yeah.
Correct.
And the Housing Authority has, because of Newport Heights and this project, has extensive experience in doing this type of project and this type of relocation. So we're very confident with how they're handling it.
I understand that better now. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, jump in if something else comes up, please. Could you please explain that construction line? I didn't quite get it. It looks like they're... Citizens is going up to 7.2 and then we step in at some point?
Yeah, so Citizens tied with the syndicator, they wanted to have a construction loan in the deal, and we've done this on other phases as well. So Citizens will basically be the first construction lender in the deal at closing. The up to $7.2 million will go in. Once we get to 50% completion, you know, Rhode Island Housing's construction loan will come in, and we will pay off the Citizens loan, and then we would go to basically to the end of construction.
But the total construction loan is, I think, 11.4.
Right. So
it seems like it were adding to what they're putting
so
in.
To clarify, this is Ann. We have to issue the tax-exempt bonds. The bonds need to be out for a certain period of time. So, and it's we have to time the issuance of the bonds for this deal along with the issuance with other deals. The max that Citizens will loan is 7%, 7 million. They may or may not be there at 9 months. Maybe it's 8 months. Maybe it's 10 months. So we will issue our bonds of 11 million, take out the Citizens, and then use the balance of the bonds to finish construction and then pay it. And all of this is done to hit the 50%.
Right, right. Okay, so at some point you're going to have the 11.2 or 11.4 outstanding.
Yes.
Yes.
And I would say that we've done this historically with Citizens. If they are the investor, they won't be the investor if they don't have some.
They want to be in.
They want to be in both sides.
Yeah. And I think that lowers our risk because they're only putting 10% of the equity in up front.
Right.
So, yeah. And how do we feel about that from our risk perspective? I assume 50% construction, so you should have a good sense of where things are at that point.
Absolutely.
Okay. So
yeah, from a risk perspective, it's a lot easier for us. I think it helps with the pricing as well because the deal is that much closer to being delivered.
Okay. And then so we'll get, I assume these are only going to be outstanding for the 18 months or 24 months and then, so we're going to get the annual issuer fee for like years. We don't get it for the full qualified.
This one, we are the issuer, so there is no issuer fee. It's part of the rate, right? So this is going to be a long-term loan, not a PAP, right? So we're issuing the bonds.
Yeah.
At construction, they'll pay down the construction portion of the loan, and $4 million will amortize for 40 years.
Yes.
Right. And so there's
years.
A rate.
35 years.
And
oh, I'm
rate.
Sorry. I'm getting my deals mixed
right.
here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we stay in. Yeah. Okay.
4.2 permanent.
Right. Okay. Just a comment. I like to see the cost increase. It looks like they made it up with $2 million more of hard debt and $1 million more credits. So good for them.
When you have a fully subsidized project.
I know. I wasn't going to. I know.
You
can
take on more debt, right?
Thank you, HUD. Yes.
Yeah. And they had to hit certain debt coverage ratio thresholds, and that was the main reason
right.
for that.
Right.
And obviously rents have risen too, so there's a lot of things taken
those rents
out.
Make everything easier.
Yep.
Yeah.
It will be insured with HUD.
And I just like to point out that asset management, along with all the other departments, reviewed this material and signed off, and asset management in particular has reviewed the operating expense pro forma and is comfortable with it.
Yes.
Any other?
No.
Okay. Well done. I'll see this moving forward. So when is the phase five, do we think?
So I think phase five probably will get some traction on that next year. I think they want to try to close by end of 2024. So,
okay.
You know, I think pretty soon here we'll be ramping up that.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you. Should we take a vote? Aye.
Aye.
It passes. Okay. On to item number five, which is recommendation. Revised approval of Housing Production Fund Award for Frenchtown Road 1 and 2 located in East Greenwich. And Stephanie,
yes.
You'll take that on.
Yes, I am. Good morning. Stephanie Booker here to request a revision of the firm approval of the Housing Production Funds for Frenchtown Road 1 and 2 granted last month. The initial HPF allocation of $3,626,381 was approved by the board on June 16, 2022. The capital stack approved as part of the February 16, 2023 firm approval for the development had a reduced HPF award due to the project receiving a $2 million federal appropriation FUD award. The inclusion of the FUD award allowed for a reduction of housing production funds. It could take 6 to 9 months for HUD to release the funds, so in an effort to close the project and begin construction, we are asking to increase the housing production funds back to the original award. Once the FUD money is available to the developer, Rhode Island Housing will discharge $1,714,881 of housing production funds, resulting in a final allocation of $1,911,500 as approved. Happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much. May I have a motion?
This is Sarah. I'll make a motion.
Great. Thanks, Sarah. I'll second it. Any questions or comments about this one?
I thought I did. You can. Could you
okay, sure.
Oh, I thought I did.
I'd just like to applaud your flexibility and making this happen. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a bind to be in, and good job.
Go it all to court.
Done. Stepping into the development.
This is the problem to have. Anytime HUD wants to give an extra $2 million into a deal, we'll figure out how to make it happen.
There you go.
And
right.
We can be that flexible.
Right.
A little extra paperwork, but it's worth it.
Right. Good. Good.
You know what? I think when I was looking at this, sorry, this is Sarah.
No.
I think when I was looking at this earlier, my question really went back to the FUD award. What takes a long? I know it's a federal agency, but what?
So you did it.
Okay. Is it?
So this is James Comer. So this is what used to be called, may still be called a legislative grant. So mm-hmm. Senator Reed's office was instrumental
yep.
in. Securing this funding for the East Greenwich Housing Authority / Cove Homes, which is their nonprofit development arm. And would that it were as simple as the federal government cutting a check, but there is technically the developer does have to apply to HUD to access these dollars. And I guess the backlog from last year's grants is still going on. They're still working their way through it. So actually just yesterday we received a package of documents from HUD about how to apply. So they said, look, we can't give you, say, it'll be done by April 15th, but the sooner you get it in, the sooner it's going to happen. It's just that there's a pipeline of things that HUD is working their way through. They can't say it's going to be ready. You're going to be able to get the dollars on this date.
Okay,
so we know that
the application's in and it's approved. It just
no, the application through. Now is going to be made by the developer. Then it will be approved by HUD. Then the funds will. And they gave us, a ballpark of 6 to 9 months. That's how long these have been taking. So, obviously costs are only going up, so we can't afford to wait 6 to 9 months to close the deal. That's why we just wanted to submit this revision. We'd be given every assurance that the money will be forthcoming. It's just a question of when. So
right.
Hedging our bets against that.
Okay.
All right. No other questions. So let's take a vote. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Great. The ayes have it. Thank you very much. I think that's... That's it, huh? Right. Well, let's jump into, a discussion pipeline.
Sure. It's not dramatically different than last month.
Sure.
We are making good progress on the review of the RFP responses, and next week we'll be meeting internally to kind of review some initial scores and threshold, sort of criteria. We're hoping by the end of March to have all of the final score and all of the thresholds so that we can then start to have our internal meeting on the low-income housing tax credits and then make final decisions as to how we will award all of those soft dollars. We joke that we'll probably need a whiteboard that's about, 12 feet long to figure out how to allocate as much as we can to as many projects as we can. So, it's a bit of a Rubik's Cube figuring out which project meets which criteria. But we're working our way through it. Staff is doing a great job. We are moving forward with, you know, closing documents for the deal Frenchtown and West House, which were approved last month. We are bringing a couple more deals, a couple of preservation deals to the board next month. So we're moving forward. It's
a big hill.
Exactly.
I have a question about in these deals. We've seen a lot of cost increases and needing to go back and put additional funding in them to make sure that they're feasible and can proceed. Do we see this? And I know nobody has a crystal ball, obviously, but do we see this as kind of a one-time, you know, throw the money in and now we're done? Or how are we looking at it? Because I know we have a lot of deals going. We can't be going through this exercise, you know, repeatedly.
I think that's a very, I mean, it could not be a truer statement. We do know we have four deals, really three deals that are, that were approved last spring and have come back in this round for additional money. We've talked internally and are really, in many ways, leaning on Tony's staff to really try and do a deep dive on the construction costs to the extent that we can, right? We have schematics, you know, depending on how quickly a developer can move, you know, they may or may not be hit with cost increases, right? So what's the right number to carry as a hedge against future increases? So I think we would like to say that it's one and done, but I'm not sure we can. To the extent that we can make sure people are doing value engineering, we can be as flexible as possible on some of our design requirements, recognizing that, you know, value engineering can sometimes impact long-term durability and operations, which, you know, leads to other issues. So we're trying to balance all of that. While still trying to be cost effective.
Right. A tough job. I want to make sure that we're sending as clear as we can the message out to the development community about what they can expect. You know, with what, I mean, you're always going to get some kind of issue, but.
And one of the things, you know, that we've stressed in all our conversations with the development community and we've brought up in this space before too is, that's why readiness to proceed is such an important piece of how we're considering these, because the quicker we can move, the, you know, it mitigates the risk. Something that's coming in for money, well, we're going to do this deal in the end of 2024.
Mm-hmm.
We don't, you know, nobody knows what that's going to look
right.
So
right.
Those deals that are positioned and have done more work and have more information in terms of, as Ann said, schematics and design work, it's going to be a little bit easier for us to see through what that ultimate cost is going to be.
And in addition to that, there's interest rate risk, right? So
sure.
What is the right hedge to put on that interest rate today for something that's, we have this conversation every day with Karen's team, like, what do, we're about to do our first swap on a deal so that we can commit to a rate 24 to 30 months from, you know, this spring, and we'll be in a position to, you know, guarantee the rate on the permanent loan. So, new territory for us.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Well, thank you for all of that work, pushing these forward.
Are there thoughts about requiring more of a contingency from the construction, from the contractors?
We would like 10%. We typically require 10% on something that's a rehab, maybe a little bit less on new construction. I think, Tony, correct me if I'm wrong, some of our deals are coming in at 10% for new construction, and then by the time we close, it's closer to 7% because some of that construction is, some of that contingency is needed to just get to the base price. Yep, all of that's on the table.
This is Tony.
And
sorry. Just to add to that, I mean, we do require 10% typically, but for new construction, we go down around 7.5%. A lot of our deals are so tight that we're skating right around 5%.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, so we really have to have decent plans and specs.
Right.
be in good shape.
Yeah.
One of the other resources we have, which will be helpful, not necessarily for the deals that are in the pipeline now, but for future deals, is the $10 million of pre-development money that's going to be made available, that we're actually is made available right now. And hopefully some developers will be able to avail themselves of that and do some exploratory work, do some investigatory work, that there aren't hidden conditions later, or that that's, you know, it's going to mitigate hopefully some of the back end costs by the fact that they'll allow them to cover certain things that need to be dealt with up front. Or there are probably things that may not be great for the project, but
it will, you know, at least give folks a little bit better idea of what they're dealing with and what the cost might be down the road.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? No? Okay. Motion to adjourn?
I will make a motion to adjourn.
Okay, great. I'll second that one. All those in favor?
Well done.
Aye.